Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Few, the Proud, the Deadly by Martha Carr and Michael Anderle. Narrated by Amanda Friday. Chapter 1. Driving down an actual paved road in two rented jeeps toward the northeastern coast of South America was a hell of a lot different than trekking through the Amazon. Mostly because Specialist Emily Trigger and the other five members of Hellion Squadron's elite and unusual Prodigal Sons team could much more easily see what lay in front of, behind, and to either side of them almost the entire time. While tropical jungle terrain still surrounded them, the team had made it out of the Amazon basin. They'd spent the last several weeks there with the long-lost tribe of magical people, who had protected an important part of the rainforest for more than a millennium. Now the Prodigal Sons were on their own, and out in the world, following the trail it had taken Hellion Command and the Brain on Fort Riot nearly a month to find. What was a few more days in comparison? They could have done a little better with the last-minute logistics, though. In the back seat of the first jeep, Emily rolled her neck from side to side, stretching out the kinks. They were an inherent part of 3 days of bumpy and jolting rides through nothing but rainforest, and only 5 hours of sleep a night, if that. Switching from a dirt road to a paved road, when they'd least expected it, had been a welcome change, but it let her acknowledge how much everything hurt. Honestly, I think I'd take building a brand new base camp in the Marajuara village over this crap. At least putting Tarzan together didn't give me whiplash every 5 minutes. The overly obnoxious growl of both jeep engines as the vehicles barreled down the paved road drowned out her groan of annoyance and discomfort. Fortunately, with Staff Sergeant Boyd behind the wheel and Stryker in the front passenger seat, no one was in the back to see her and quip about how comfy she looked. The vehicles had been immediately available in another larger village northeast of the Marajuara's private hidden land, rented out at an incredibly cheap rate, as if the owners couldn't wait to get the things off their hands. After the first 2 hours spent in this back seat, Emily understood why. Their Hellion devices charted their progress toward their next target destination. Boyd's insistence this morning that the team only had another day of travel, in the least comfortable way Emily could imagine, had been overeager. Still, remembering what life had been like without the jeeps became increasingly more difficult by the minute. Nevertheless, the Prodigal Sons barreled toward the South American coast on what might have been the most crucial mission of their careers, and toward the first real lead they'd had in their elusive and marauding enemy target since first setting foot in the Hellion jet that had taken off from Fort Riot. Thinking about the Hellion command base in the unmarked countryside of northern North Carolina made Emily smirk, as much as she could, given how done she was with this damn back seat. Samsu and the Marajuara have their secret village in the middle of the Amazon, hidden by the jungle and protected by magic. Hellion has Riot, hidden behind electric fences and no trespassing signs, and protected by a shit ton of private funding and magic. We were bound to join up one of these days. All it took was a homicidal demigod popping up out of the ground and a whole village of civilian victims making the evening news. Now all we need is any fucking clue how to take down the god of magic, who basically smeared us all against the wall the last time we saw him. With any luck, the Prodigal Sons would stumble upon the solution anyway. Luck didn't seem to be on their side, since their single greatest outside resource had stayed behind in the Amazon with the rest of his people. That was the duty every Marajuara for centuries had sworn to uphold. Even when the one immortal prisoner the tribe had been tasked with guarding beneath their sacred site escaped with the help of a still unidentified stranger, not even the tribe's head shaman had seen coming. More than once throughout this mission, Emily had compared her current team's present circumstances to the shitshow life as a Hellion operator had been, when the kind of magic they understood went off the rails. During that time, the kind of monsters they'd fought had thrown all the rules of engagement out the window. In simple terms, this sucked, and the Sons still couldn't claim they had any idea what they were doing. At least we still have our magic, and it works the way it's supposed to. Technically, that only applied to the other five operators of her temporary new team. Since her last disastrously failed mission with Hellion's Bravo team in the Ural Mountains over a month ago, Emily had been dealing with a little extra something tied to her magical abilities. She still hadn't figured out how it worked, how to control it, or how the hell she was supposed to use it to aid their mission. Especially when she wasn't acting on impulse and instinct and trying not to get the entire team killed by a series of stupid mistakes. Almost as if it could read her thoughts, the burning tingle of this altered magic inside her flared to life like a bad case of premature heartburn in the center of Emily's chest. Grimacing again, she glanced at the back of Boyd's head in the driver's seat in front of her, then at the sliver of Stryker's profile visible in the passenger seat. Only when she felt fairly certain neither of them was paying any attention to how she handled her discomfort in the back of the Jeep did she lift her hand to rub the growing tingle behind her breastbone. A burst of crackling yellow flared at her fingertips, enough for Emily to see it, but hopefully no one else. Not now. Seriously, not now. The last thing we need is for one of these stupid Jeeps to get fried by Lil Sparky just 'cause I'm a little sore. At the very least, let's save it for when we can dump the luxury vehicles and find something else. The burning in her chest subsided a little at that. It was impossible to tell whether that was because she wanted it to, or the occasional flare of her new and unexplored abilities felt like settling down on its own. Then the Jeep went over a particularly large pothole, which was still fairly common. The entire vehicle leapt and jostled back and forth, shaking its passengers. Emily grunted when her body left the hard, poorly cushioned seat and thumped painfully back into it. But there was no room for complaints. They had to get to their destination as soon as possible, and if that meant a few hidden bruises along the way, so be it. She'd already been dinged up enough during this out-of-the-box mission as it was. A glance over her shoulder offered a view of Gonzalez, Robbins, and Nelson in the second vehicle, surrounded by nothing but trees and more trees on either side. Emily considered making the most of driving for eternity by spreading out across the back seat and trying to get some extra shut-eye. Sergeant Boyd pumped the brakes to slow the Jeep to an infinitely bumpier crawl. Then they pulled over on the side of the road in front of about an acre of cleared land off the first bit of asphalt they'd seen in South America. That excluded the sun's last-minute romp into Bogota and its National Museum of Colombia. They'd kept one weakened but still terrifyingly powerful god of magic from getting his creepy, long-fingered hands on his long-lost staff. That trip had only been a quick in-and-out, because magic portals cast in the air by an ancient tribe's puff of colorful powder tended to be direct. The prodigal sons had no portals now. Only two cheaply rented Jeeps, 3 days on the road, and a severe lack of comfort that made their stay at the Marajuara village feel like an extended resort getaway. All part of the job, isn't it? So why are we stopping now? No way in hell this little patch of dirt is the village we're looking for. Tires rumbled and crunched over gravel. Thick plumes of dust sprayed up behind them, whisked off by the muggy and thick breeze that carried a hint of salt from the brackish water of the Suriname River flowing northeast toward the coast. As soon as both Jeeps came to a complete stop, Boyd shut off the engine and hopped out of the first one before rounding the side to haul gear out of the back. Stryker and Emily stayed in their seats. The one operator on the team, who looked fairly normal most of the time, except for all 10 of his fingers, consisting of long, glinting, razor-sharp knife blades he could neither hide nor put away at will, twisted in the front passenger seat to raise an eyebrow at her. Emily shrugged and shook her head. There was no way they'd made it to their next destination already, and this was the small village of Pokegron. Gonzalez shut off the engine in the second vehicle and immediately got out, followed by Robbins and Nelson. Gonzalez stood beside the closed driver's side door and turned in a slow half-circle, scratching his head as he eyed their surroundings and the single acre of cleared land where their team leader had decided to pull over. The guy was so tall and broad-shouldered that the gesture made him look clueless and potentially dull-witted. At this point in her almost 5 weeks in the Amazon with the prodigal sons, Emily had learned that Sergeant Gonzalez was anything but. even when he rocked out, and his head became thick as stone. Robbins headed toward the rear of the second Jeep to open the rear door and rifle through the back for her ruck and the rest of her gear without a word. Her unnaturally dark, slate-gray skin, bone-white hair, and glowing silver eyes made her stand out like a hand grenade in a designer clothing store. The sight was nothing compared to seeing the woman's glowing eyes in the dark, or watching her jump in and out of shadows like a pissed-off ghost. Nelson was the first to find the words the rest of the team wanted to ask, even if Robbins acted like she didn't give a shit where they were or what they were trying to pull off next. Sergeant? Nelson took a few steps toward Boyd at the back of the first Jeep, then stopped and made a point of looking across the swath of cleared land on the side of the road before wrinkling his nose. The team's medic didn't look the part. Not that any of them did. His glowing skin and hues of red and orange immediately drew attention, and the warping, shifting lines of bright yellow crisscrossing his flesh like moving tattoos didn't do him any favors. Standing next to the guy had at first made Emily wary of how close she could get to another operator who looked like flowing lava molded into the shape of a man. As it turned out, only water paid the price for touching Nelson's skin, and any unlucky operator who sustained a wound serious enough to need cauterizing medical attention. In that respect, Emily had been remarkably lucky more than once already. Nelson cleared his throat and didn't look convinced about their next move. "Are you sure this is the right place? I mean, I did check, and satellite GPS doesn't mesh with this location. But if we follow this road another 2.5 clicks, we'll finally end up in the village of Pokegron?" Boyd interrupted as he slung one strap of his ruck over a shoulder. Then he turned away from the first Jeep to look Nelson in the eye. "Good to know our location's consistent across the board. But we're..." Nelson stepped away from the second vehicle to grimace at the sight of Robbins in civilian clothing that did little to hide her startling physical attributes, with her ruck on her shoulders and her rifle held ready in both hands. When her silver eyes flicked up toward him with the full strength of violent disapproval Emily had come to recognize as their natural state, Nelson clicked his tongue and looked at Boyd again. "We're leaving the vehicles here?" "What's wrong, Nelson?" Slinging an arm over the back of the rear seat as casually as possible and turning to face him, Emily shot the medic a joking smirk. 2.5 clicks feel like too much for you today?" He looked sharply at her, not expecting an unfunny but good-natured ribbing from the Sun's newest one-woman tactical support attachment, so soon after finally getting an actual lead on their target.
"That's good coming from you,"
Gonzalez gestured in Emily's general direction.
"You haven't even gotten out yet."
Boyd cut in, ignoring the jests and the sharp barbs his operators frequently tossed each other's way any chance they got.
"Even in civvies, there's no way in hell we won't draw more attention to ourselves than we already do if we roll up to the village border in these things."
He nodded dismissively at the Jeeps.
"Foreign military presence without jurisdiction or regional authorization to be here in the first place will raise way more red flags than we can afford."
Emily snorted and gestured at the rest of the Sun's members.
"It's the Jeeps that'd give us away."
Boyd raised an eyebrow at her, then looked from one of his operators to the next. Stryker's fingers, Nelson's glowing skin, Robin's granite-tinted face and glowing silver eyes. Only half the unit could believably pass as civilians, although Gonzalez already drew enough attention with his almost incomprehensible size. Since Sergeant Boyd didn't control the frequency or the outcome of his shifting features that made him look like a completely different person, letting civilians see him out and about in public also posed a risk to the team's attempts to fit in. When he'd finished silently assessing their chances of not being singled out by an entire village already on the verge of panic, mayhem, and anarchy, Boyd cleared his throat.
"Didn't think I was obligated to run through the plan 2.5 clicks before we get there."
Stryker's fingers clinked when he made as much of a fist as all that deadly steel could manage, lifted it toward his mouth, and forced a cough.
"'Cause he needs another 2.5 clicks to come up with the rest of it."
Emily couldn't hide a smile as she shot an amused glance his way. Instead of calling them out on their sarcastic ribbing, Boyd turned away from the first vehicle and its open rear door and marched toward the dirt road.
"Get your asses out of those comfy seats and fall in,"
The seats were the furthest thing from comfy. Now that they'd stopped here, instead of driving to the village border to take a look around, she couldn't envision whatever new approach to this part of their mission her team leader thought would be far more successful. Nor could she stay in the back of the Jeep while the rest of the team gathered their gear and plodded onward after Boyd. Guess this mission's affecting all Hellion leadership. Boyd doesn't know any more about our next steps than Command does. How fun for us. The Prodigal Son's team leader had received a single piece of intelligence from Command about their enemy target being spotted out here in Pokigran, Suriname, once the small village with a population of only about 400 people had its 5 minutes of fame. It wasn't officially intelligence. Colonel McBlair had seen the face of Hekka, god of magic, on the early evening news 3 days ago, and had immediately called his only Hellion team apprised of the current and potentially world-ending situation. The tip was enough to get the prodigal sons off their feet and out of the hidden Marajuara village, which was more than they'd had so far during this mission. Emily shut the rear door to the Jeep behind her a second after Stryker shut the passenger's door. After grabbing their gear from the rear of the vehicle, they fell in with the rest of the loose formation of visually misfit Hellion operators, following their team leader down the only paved road for hundreds of miles. "Sergeant Boyd?" Nelson asked from the front of the group. Boyd only glanced at him and raised his eyebrows in interest. Are we leaving the vehicles, or...
Depends on whether we need them again.
Their team leader didn't take his gaze off the far end of the asphalt, stretching through a seeming eternity of jungle trees and lush foliage.
And the people we rented them from?
Nelson wrinkled his nose.
I mean, we did rent those jeeps, but it didn't seem like returning them was ever discussed. What if they're not...
90% of your questions can't be answered until we see the village ourselves and assess our tactical options from there.
So then if we...
That means shut the hell up, Nelson,
Stryker clarified. The medic partially turned to look over his shoulder at the operator and scowled. Stryker shrugged and kept walking. Robin stared ahead, looking like someone who'd traveled back and forth along this road on foot for her entire life. Or someone who would have rather been anywhere but here. Gonzalez lumbered along at the rear of their semi-straggling line. He spared a glance at Emily, moving more or less beside him.
What's wrong with you?
She blinked, then dubiously frowned.
Nothing. What's your problem?
A small smile flickered at the corner of the operator's mouth.
You look like someone stabbed you in the back.
Oh, nice. That could be interpreted so many different ways. Rolling her eyes, she faced fully forward again and shook her head.
You're telling me there's something wrong with my face, then?
I mean, when it looks like that.
She snorted, then automatically rolled her neck again from side to side, grimacing even harder as she tried to rub the kinks out with her free hand.
Perks of a luxury safari right out of the fucking Amazon, huh?
With a sigh that ended in a tired-sounding chuckle, Gonzalez nodded.
Bunch of stuff they didn't mention in the brochures. Vehicle suspension shit. No available feather beds where you want them, when you need them. Especially if you're moving ahead of expedition schedule.
Aw, big guy hasn't been getting his beauty sleep, huh?
How do you think I got this big in the first place?
Both snickered as they brought up the rear of their six-person team's final ruck down the paved road, out in the open, heading toward Pokigran.
I'm going to have to file a complaint with the Adventure Board when all this is over,
Emily added, putting on her best impersonation of a snooty, self-centered, high-society somebody who had no business being out in the rainforest in the first place. Pinching her fingers together with pinky raised and swinging her hand delicately beside her face, she added,
Can you believe they brought us all the way out here and didn't even have a landing strip for the private jet? How hard is that? When I see all-inclusive, I expect all-inclusive. It's a travesty.
Gonzalez grunted and readjusted his grip on his firearm.
A real injustice.
Utterly appalling.
You should ask for your money back.
That made her laugh. There's only one way to sum the whole thing up perfectly. You know what it is?
Bet you're gonna tell me.
Pursing her lips in an attempt to keep the charade going, Emily cleared her throat, fluttered her eyelashes, and honked, "Fuck that!" Then she let out a wild laugh that was completely over the top for her team's current circumstances. Whether it was the laugh or her sudden explosive expletive, the ensuing surprise and confusion made Sergeant Boyd pause at the front of their loose formation so he could look back over his shoulder at her with another raised eyebrow.
"Is that right?"
Nelson, Stryker, and Robbins did the same, but instead of offering an unamused and rhetorical question, they stared at her. Emily's smile faded when she realized her mistake. Then she scoffed and spread her arms, faking complete nonchalance.
"Why is everybody looking at me? We gonna bag this demigod fucker or what?"
Boyd clicked his tongue, then turned to continue walking. Nelson scrunched up his face and vigorously ruffled a hand through shaggy auburn hair before following suit. Robbins rolled her eyes. Stryker scratched an itch on the side of his nose with the lethal point of a finger. Then they were all moving again.
"Well, shit,"
Emily murmured, scowling after all of them. Beside her, Gonzalez tried to hold back a laugh and only ended up snorting in quick, joking bursts when he failed. She punched his arm, which didn't do anything to a guy his size when she didn't have the momentum of her super speed behind the blow, and stalked after the others with a scowl.
"Keep laughing. See what happens."
He caught up to her easily enough with his freakishly long strides. The crooked smile she'd been halfway starting to enjoy made her want to slap it off his face and make him smile some more at the same time.
"That's a new one," he muttered.
"I don't know what the hell you're talking about," she grumbled,
her prickliness having fully returned now that she'd let her guard down enough to make a mistake like this latest one.
"Feel free to keep it to yourself."
"That look on your face? Haven't seen that one yet."
"It's a face. It has different looks. Deal with it." Emily rolled her eyes, curious as to exactly what face she'd made, but chagrined enough that asking was totally out of the question. "And I told you to keep it to yourself."
"Yeah, but if I didn't know better?"
He lowered his head and tilted it toward her to draw her gaze again. It didn't work.
"I'd say Specialist Trigger looks embarrassed right now."
"Well, great. You know better, and you're still an idiot." She cleared her throat and glanced at the clear blue sky with puffy clouds trailing overhead. "Now shut up about it." Gonzalez chuckled again, but didn't say another word, as the sons walked together in expectant silence toward their next target location. They had enough space to spread out across the road for the first time since landing in the Amazon. Better still, they saw the ground under their boots instead of it being covered with layers of thick undergrowth and decaying plant matter. No thick vines, dangling branches, or trees blocked their view beyond what was right in front of them. It should have felt like a breath of fresh air, even with the briny, fishy odor tinging everything. Emily didn't feel very fresh or relieved. Beyond the aggravations of having spent 5 weeks on a mission that had essentially started as a dead end, right now, she felt like a moron.
"Can't let your guard down like that, Trigger. Fists up. Protect your face. You know that."
Mostly, she was pissed at herself for forgetting the differences between her current circumstances and where she'd been before Colonel McBlair had temporarily reassigned her to the prodigal sons before shipping her off on an impossible mission. She'd shouted, "Fuck that," and laughed like it would mean something to the rest of her current unit. They'd all stared at her like she'd dropped in from space with two heads, five arms, and a purple latex bodysuit. Gritting her teeth, she stared straight ahead at nothing and let her legs take care of the rest on autopilot.
Bravo would have gotten it. And Bravo's not fucking here.
Chapter 2.
Nelson's analysis of their GPS coordinates was as accurate as always. Exactly 2.5 clicks from where they dropped their vehicles, Emily and her unit reached the first indication of finally making it to the village of Pokégron. None of the operators had let themselves grow hopeful that their arrival in the small village would provide any true advantage during their mission. Still, it had been their only lead, and as good a place to start as any. Unfortunately, as soon as the outskirts of the village came into view, so did the obvious obstacles Emily and her unit faced if they intended to get inside that village. The end of the paved road became chipped and splintered asphalt, blending haphazardly into more dirt roads and footpaths. Those wound between groups of huts and small, squat, single-story concrete buildings, or ones with modern wooden siding. Tarnished bicycles and brightly painted fishing boats rested against the outer walls of most buildings. An occasional dented pickup or second-hand vehicle that looked more like an ice cream truck, repurposed for different businesses, showed. Even from the team's distance on the road, it was clear the majority of Pokégrand's commerce consisted of fishing from the Suriname River, which trailed behind the village, built on a naturally jutting peninsula along the waterway. The river wasn't quite visible from the sun's location on the road. Now that they were finally here, they wouldn't get a good look at the water anytime soon. Not from the village, anyway. A sprawling barricade and a small but watchfully dedicated military installation, posted here by the Suriname government, took up the last quarter mile of paved road before the first buildings lining the outskirts of Pokégrand. Three military vehicles parked lengthwise across the asphalt formed the blockade, ensuring no vehicles entered or exited via the road. Not one, but two long, high chain-link fences completed the barrier, and these stretched away from the road on either side before curving around the entire village. It wasn't possible to see the end of those fences. If Emily had to guess, she would have said they stretched to the riverbank, where the Suriname River formed the back end of the enclosed area as a natural perimeter line, with the people of Pokégrand conveniently contained inside. Sergeant Boyd halted the team as he scanned the blockade from a safe distance.
Okay? Nelson tilted his head. Guess the jeeps wouldn't have done any good anyway. Which is why we left them behind.
Boyd narrowed his eyes to inspect as much of the barricade as possible from their current distance. Then he pivoted and walked swiftly toward the side of the road and off into the thick jungle. Emily and the others eyed each other in fleeting confusion, then followed their team leader into the densely packed trees they'd had the last 5 weeks to grow accustomed to navigating through. He didn't lead them very far, only deep enough to completely hide the team's presence from view, no matter where someone might have been looking from out on the road. Then he glanced at his watch.
Nelson, find me the next closest village on this side of the river. Even better if it has touristy vibes.
All the way out here?
Robbins quirked an eyebrow and scanned the darkness beneath the thick jungle canopy.
Pokégrand isn't a coastal city or a port, but it's close enough. There's bound to be something.
Their team leader scanned the other operators' faces, pausing for a glance at Stryker's fingers, while Nelson whipped out his thin, clear, state-of-the-art Hellion device to carry out his orders for a new search of the surrounding area. The rest of the team waited for Boyd to share whatever last-minute plan he'd concocted for them on their 3-day journey across South America. Boyd waited for Nelson's data before jumping to anything else.
Oh, hey!
Nelson tapped the screen of his device and squinted, lowering his head for a closer look.
Not a city or a village, per se, but there's a resort.
Gonzalez snorted.
For real?
Dantabai Resort.
Yep, it's got a listing for reservations and everything.
Stryker grimaced.
People pay to be here. For fun.
Boyd folded his arms.
When they're not hunting an escaped demigod on a zombie-making murder spree? Sure, why not? Is that what you're looking for?
Nelson's face scrunched up again in confusion and curiosity.
How far away is it?
Just over 14 clicks. The medic studied his device. That's by road. Half an hour's drive.
Any more direct route?
I mean... Nelson scoffed and gestured at the screen. The river? If you're trying to go north to the Atlantic?
Coming from the resort, Nelson.
The medic sighed, tilted his head, and shrugged.
Looks like just under a 5-click ruck through nothing but jungle and more jungle. So we'll call it an easily paced hour.
Yeah. If there aren't any major obstacles en route. Unfortunately, Sergeant, nobody maps out what's hidden inside the rainforest. The team leader dismissed Nelson's half-sarcastic clarification with a flippant wave. So there's no way anyone can...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?